All right, welcome everybody. Welcome to the ESPITA Delaware Art Charter Operations Board meeting. Can I have a motion to go into executive session?
Motion.
Motion.
Who motion?
Brown.
Got it. Do I have a second? Martisha was second. All in favor? Raise your hand. All right, or say aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Going to an executive session.
Okay, we're back on.
Perfect. Thank you. So do I have a motion to go back into the public session?
So
that was Margie for Barry. Have a second?
Second.
Is that Jeff?
Yep.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Perfect. All right, so we can roll into the approval of the meeting minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the meeting minutes.
I second.
Margie Rivera seconds. All in favor? And any opposed? Perfect.
Hey, Luis, before you go on, I just want to excuse myself for a little bit. We're hosting our back to school event for the AVA program. So I just want to step out and meet the families and I'll jump back on. Thank Perfect. You.
Perfect. Then we got Greg with the financials.
Can everyone hear me and see, well, not see me, but see the report? Yes, Luis?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to talk about so this is an interesting meeting. It'll take me a little bit longer this time, but we're going to go through the end of year, fiscal year 22 report, which is our June. And then we're going to go right to the July, which is the first report for the fiscal year 23. And then I'll end it with our preliminary operating budget for FY23. And I know we've got some new members on, and I just want to let everyone know we follow the same method for all the financial reports. You'll see the rhythm as we go, but it's the same type of report and it's the same order. As far as how I discuss it. So again, this is the last one for June. That was obviously 100% for the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. Our second tab, which you'll see has the former board, that was where we ended end of June, and then you'll see the new board on the next report. So we always start in revenues, and I know this goes kind of quick, so please just jump in and ask all the questions you want. And another note, I'm always available. All you got to do is send me an email. I'll make time at night, weekends, whatever anyone wants. So, again, this is revenue. Our budget for the year was $11.6 million. We received $11.7 million, or 101%. So that obviously is favorable. For our local funding, $8.3 million was a budget. We came in at 9.7, or 116%. And a lot of that was attributed to the fine work of our capital campaign and a few individuals that worked very hard in raising funds for us. And then the last subtotal is always our federal. That budget was $1.4 million. We came in at 1.5. And again, favorable in that category as well. So we had a great year revenue-wise. Our overall budget was $21.3 million. We came in at almost 107%, over $1.5 million favorable. So again, never want to complain about that. I'll get into the expense detail as the last part of the financial report, but this is just a recap of all the subcategories. But bottom line, the operating budget last year was projected for expenses of $21.2 million. We were about 20.9 million, or 99%, which that too is favorable. So we were favorable. We were over in revenue and we were under in expenses. So you're never going to hear a complaint about that. This number here that's highlighted, that is almost $7 million. And that basically represents the available funds that we have. It's not actually, if you think about true cash carryover, and when you look at what auditors, when they present us our audited financials, the difference here is our federal money that we have to count because of the way we report. We don't actually get to count that as reserve. We only get to count it as we spend it. But overall, we were still over $5 million, which I'll explain a little bit more later. But again, we had a great year. No variances to report on the expenditure side. Over here is, I like to show, which equates to this line graph below, but we like to keep up with our monthly spend. We spent $1.7 million in June, which was a little under our average. You'll see which happens with charter schools. We're not unique to this. We spend the bulk of our money in the beginning of the fiscal year, and there's a reason for that. Besides school startup, we have our bond debt that we pay in July and August. So you'll see a difference when we get to the other report, but typically what happens is we want to end like we did with the red line is below the blue line, which just, again, it's a picture showing that we don't spend more money than we have. And it's all driven by these fields up here. The local funding update, this is our school district money. That's a big, the bulk of our local funding that I reported on earlier in this report. So this is the money that follows the students. And there's no reason why we wouldn't be at 100%, but we're usually right at 100% because the districts aren't going to give us any more money than they have to. But you can see that we were spot on. And then the cash position basically takes the previous year carryover and then all the new revenue that I just reported on, and it lumps together because it is our money. And then it shows the current expenditures or where we ended for the month, or in this case, the end of the year, because each month adds up. But this is truly a 12-month depiction of what we did. So this was the year-to-date received with the carryover, which was about $28 million. I already reported that our expenses was $21 million, and then that's the remaining balance. When I mentioned about the this remaining balance includes all the carryover, but down here is the capital funding, which is a little over $1.7 million. That doesn't really count as far as true cash carryover. So I hope I'm explaining that well enough. Okay, and then I do have a, Lewis and I added this, I think 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. I guess, yeah, FY20. We wanted to show what the fundraising or the capital campaign, how that was doing, and all the grant work that the team has been doing. So it offers, you know, a nice picture of what money has been asked for in some cases, but the big piece of this is how much has been awarded. So last year, which this would show in the local funding update, we raised over $1.3 million, which is outside of our traditional funding model, which was, again, it's a lot of money that they worked hard on getting, just phenomenal. But I will carry that on to the FY23 reports, as you will see in a minute. And then the last part of the financial report, we talk about expense in detail. I don't talk about every line, but again, it's laid out the same way, just like it is in our operating budget. It carries over to every financial report that you see, and doesn't matter what month of the year we're talking about. And it is cumulative from starting from July 1 and then through each month. So as with any business, salaries and OECs or other employment costs are your biggest hitter towards an operating budget. We're no different. But you'll see that we budgeted $8.9 million. We came in at 9, or 101%. For our other employment costs, which includes health insurance and all the required fees that we have, just like any other business, we budgeted $4.8 million, came in a little under, 4.6 or 96%. I should have mentioned anything that would show as a variance, which is 25% over the allowable budget, even though it rolled up into the subcategory and didn't create it, we didn't have any variances. I still show any individual variance in this report, so I just list the comments on the right, which would give you a brief explanation of why that might have happened. Anyhow, for total travel, the budget's 1.4 million. We're at basically 1.4. We were 5,000 over, or 100% for the year. But really, for this whole subcategory, this is a big hitter here. About $1.3 million goes towards student transportation. And then we got a larger category, which is called contracted services. Our budget was 2.6. We came in at 2.7. But again, there were some reasons for that. It wasn't actually a variance. We were just slightly over budget. And then supplies and materials down here, 1.3 is our budget. We came in at a little less than budget, but 1.3. So it was 100%. And then total capital outlay equipment, 49,000 the budget. We came in at 36,000 or 74%. And then another big ticket, because our debt service is in here. And then prior to the bond financing, we did have construction expense that was hitting the books and going through the state financial system. So it has to be shown as such. But you'll see the budget was 2.1. We were actually 1.8, but as I explained in the Financial Oversight Committee meeting the other day, that was really a result of our bond trustee did not invoice us. They should have really invoiced us prior to the end of last year for like a little over $200,000, I believe, but they instead put it all in one invoice in July. It doesn't really impact us, but that was why we were under budget here. But again, it's really not a concern. 21.1 was our overall budget for last year. As I said, we came in about 21 million or at 99%. I will tell you, and you'll see this when we did have our financial audit in July. I can tell you that we had our best year ever financially, which is great. Most of that is because of the fundraising that we've done outside of the traditional funding. But when we get the audited financials back, the accountants will be involved in both the Financial Oversight Committee meetings and also the ACTO meeting. And they'll go through the, not only the audit, but also show you a little different. It's called the financial statements, which is what our covenants, I think Luis mentioned earlier in the executive session, but we will be solid with our bond covenants. I can assure you that we had a great year. So I know that was quick. This is just June, but again, it's important because it is the last financial report for fiscal year 22, but we had a tremendous year before I jump to another report, which will be July. Are there any questions?
Craig, just real quick, I think you may have mentioned it, but when did we start the like broader campaign financing or fundraising? And like, I think we are at 1.3 million. How long did that take? I just want to make sure I'm understanding. Yeah.
So we're actually a little bit higher than that, but you can see back in 20. So Margie mentioned this too. So we did get through DOE, a federal grant that's CSP. You see, we got $1 million. Now, that's always brokered through DOE. So back in the day when charter schools started, you actually, because we don't get capital funding, you actually were supposed to get, Margie, correct me if I'm wrong, a three-year grant to help start the school. Interestingly, yeah,
$300,000 every year for 3 years.
And then our second year, we were informed that not just us, but that no longer existed. So we had to revise our budget. But the nice thing is there is now the Delaware Charter School Program grant that's available. And it is through, again, federal funding, which DOE brokers. But that is now available again. That really wasn't the result of fundraising that we've done on our own. But all these others, you can see, you'll see Longwood Welfare. I think everybody's heard of, we've got Charter School Growth Fund. That was for 3 years. We have New School Venture Fund for 3 years. So these are all the big hitters, I should say. There's other donations and all that I don't show on here. I just really show the grants.
And the purpose there, it's all pretty much just high school. Is that giving us right. a pretty broad scope of what we can use those funds for as long as it goes into the high school? Or are they specifically yes. earmarked for something? Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So as most people know, when you write a grant, you're basically saying, we would like this money, and this is why we built our case, and you hope that you get everything you ask for. But then when you do get notification that you're successful in getting some funding, you do have to spend the money as allocated in the application. So that's the purpose. You're exactly right, Alberto. This is why I put the purpose so we know, but this really is, as you can see, high school or support of our program. Some grants may not be capital, but you think about it, it's operationally, which, you know, it's our operating budget. So anyway, we get funding, we can always make it work, because if we're putting it in towards, say we put it towards operations, which could be anything that I just reported on, all those different expenses, that frees up revenue to use for capital. So it helps either way. Mm-hmm. I hope I articulate that well enough to
yeah.
people understand.
That makes sense. Thank you.
That's a great question. Thank you. Any other questions? And again, I am happy to take time for any, it doesn't have to be a new board member, but for any board member, I will meet you based on your schedule, and it can be weekend, whenever it needs to be, because it's important that, if you have questions or, you know, you just have a thought, you can send me an email, but I'm always going to be there or not. I would be glad to meet with anybody. Luis, so I don't hear any questions. Do you want to get approval here before I jump, or do you want me to just continue?
We can get approval after both reports. Do it at once.
Excellent. Okay, so now we're going to go to the first one for fiscal year 23. So again, it's laid out exactly the same. So now we're talking the period from July 1 to July 31st, which instead of being 100% through the fiscal year, we're obviously at just 8%. And then, as I said, I updated, which this is on our website as well. So this has all the new, it's the active board, you all, and then it also has a financial oversight committee, which Anas chairs. And we also have our director of finance, Ms. Kelly Cruz, that was added our last meeting. So then, is this large enough, or do I need to make it larger? Is that good enough, Luis?
Good. Okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
A little bit larger, if you could.
A little bit larger?
I'm blind.
I'm working on one eye, so I hear you. Okay, so here we go. So revenue, again, the same way I do it every board meeting. Our subtotal state, right now I'm projecting 13.6 million for our for this fiscal year. We always get a preload from the state because we have to have money to start on besides our carryover. But we basically have $10 million right now, 10.1 or 74%. And I should probably add right now, this is very typical. You're not going to see a lot of funding in the next categories, but this is very typical and it happens every year. It's just the way the money comes in, the funding, which a lot of it is driven by our unit count, which doesn't get locked in until September 30th. Our subtotal local, I'm projecting 8.8. You can see we don't have any new revenue. It's pretty much all school generated funds, 144,000 or just 2%, but please don't be scared by that. And then for our subtotal for federal, this basically is the allocations that we will get, what's called the consolidated grant. We get those totals from DOE, and then we apply and we'll get that money. But we have no federal funding, no new federal money, which again is very normal. But you see, we do have quite a bit of carryover. So for new revenue, we're at 0% for federal. Right now, again, the overall budget, I'm sorry, is 23.2 for new revenue. We have 10.3 for 44%, but nothing to be nervous about. This is the way it always is. A snapshot on the expenses. I'm budgeting 24 million. Right now we're at 2 million or 9%. We don't have any variances to report, which again would be 25% or anything at 33%. We did spend $2 million. You'll see a lot more in August because August 1st was when our check was written for the bond financing. There's obviously no trending to look at here, but give it a couple months and you'll start seeing a red line and blue line. Don't need to talk about the average meeting, but again, we spent $2 million. And then when you look at the local funding update, but what I do, because again, our students aren't locked in and it's very fluid up until really till September 3rd, 30th, when it all gets locked in. I basically project based on what we had last year. So this is, again, that's our 100% target of 1,347 students. That's what it would equate to, 6.5 million. And again, we don't get any of that money. We won't start getting any of that money until probably around October. And then the final piece of it won't come until December and January. So for our cash position, again, that now takes into account the, what did I say, $6 million that we carried over, and then all the new revenue. So that's why you see now, I reported earlier, we had $10 million, but now you see $17 million because we do have that available to us. We spent $2 million. We do have some encumbered money, but that's how much money we had remaining at the end of July. So, you know, $13 million. So as I mentioned, I did add, not to put any pressure on our team, but I did add some columns for FY23, some lines. As I mentioned earlier, we did pick up $1.3 million in grant funding alone, private grants, I should say, which is phenomenal. After 2020, that 4.3 is where we're at. And then for our expenditures, again, based on the budget that I'm going to get to, and then the actual expenses through July, our budget for salaries is almost $11 million. We spent $1 million. We did have three payrolls in July. I guess it's a good time to mention this is a unique year in the state of Delaware. Since everyone's paid biweekly. So this happens every 11 or 12 years where we have 27 pays. In a traditional year, we have 26. So that adds to our expenses as well. Our OECs, 5.5, we're at 490,000, and just 9%. Then our total travel, we haven't started transporting kids yet. That's going to change on Monday. But 1.5 million of the budget, we spent $1,400. You'll see some more for August because we did have our summer programs running, our extended school year, which is for special ed, and then our accelerated learning that went on. So you'll see a little bit of movement in that category next month. For contracted services, the budget's 2.1 million. We do have some encumbered money of $1,200, and basically it's $185,000 counting both the expenses and the encumber, or just 9% of budget. Then total supplies and materials, budget's $2 million. We did have some encumbered funds. That puts it at 347 or 17%. The one thing I want to call out is you'll see in this institutional equipment line, that's a big number. It's $1,442. But that's actually specific to the Longwood grant that we received last June. So the money came in June, but the expenses come out this fiscal year. It's just a timing thing. There's no control we have over that. We have to report the income when we get it, which we did. But unfortunately, the expense will hit this year because it's basically for the high school. So anyhow, that's a big number, $2 million. And then for total capital outlay equipment, $40,000 is the budget. We haven't spent anything there, so we're 0%. Then we have total capital outlay property, which again includes the bond debt service, which will be 1.9. So it's 1.9 million overall. We did have a little bit of encumbered money, but a lot of encumbered money, which was the two of the three POs for the bond debt service invoice, I should say. So it shows right now as far as expenses at 0%, but really, and that's what you're going to see in August. It's really 94%, and it'll be higher than that, actually. So the grand totals, and I'm going to get into the budget in a minute. The grand total for revenues, $24 million. Right now, with the encumbered funds, we're at 16%. Without the encumbered fund, we're at 9%. Any questions on that? So that's the first financial report for fiscal year 23. And then next, I will get into the actual operating, or I should say the preliminary operating.
Thanks, Greg. Motion to approve both of the financial reports as presented.
Motion to approve both financial reports, Penix Tadson.
You have a second?
Second, Guillermina Gonzalez.
Perfect. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
All right, awesome. Okay, so now, as you can see, this is the 2023 preliminary operating budget. So for the new board members, you will actually get a final operating budget presented to you in January. Again, it's not unique. That's our charter business, but all of our funding gets locked in after September 30th. So we have to have a budget to operate on, obviously. So it's always a preliminary budget for the first half of the year, and then the true operating budget for the last half of the year. No difference here, except again, I just put in the new board, all the new members, and then the Financial Oversight Committee. It's laid out just like everything else you've seen. But to explain a little bit of how we budget and some of the parameters we use, I do like to talk about the key assumption. And I think everyone knows this, but remember, everything we do is posted. We're very transparent. We don't hide anything. So everything you see, anyone that clicks on our website can see the same thing. So we don't hide anything. The more information we put out there, I think the better off we are. And that's been a strategy since day one. So here's our key assumption. Again, our enrollment, 1,347 students between the building. Our revenue projections include a carryover of $6.9 million. Our state funding projections are based on a funding summary. And that's a report that I get from the state. DOE, as I said, when we open up, July 1, or actually a little after July 1, when the system opens and we can start paying bills, we do get a preliminary load from the state, which is typically based on May 1st student count the previous year. Everything gets adjusted again after September 3rd. The local school district funding, that's based on preliminary FY22 school expenditures. I think I have a chart that I'm going to be able to show you in a minute. To explain that, so everyone knows that I just don't make these numbers up. Revenue projections include $735,000 in awarded grants and capital campaign donations. And then our salaries are based on 100% of the Christina School District salary schedule. And I did mention already, this year's expenditures include a 27 pay. And then expenditures include increase in bond debt for acquisition and renovations of the high school. So really what I want to show you here, you'll see it's highlighted. This is our model that we follow. This model doesn't change. And Luis will tell you, it's a model that works. So we live by it. Basically, it's based on new revenue, and then it's expenses towards that new revenue. So over here, you'll see like salaries and overseas, that's your biggest part of your operating budget, which is typical with any business. Our range is 65 to 75%. You'll see the debt or a mortgage or rent, the debt, whatever you want to call it, is 15% in student transportation. And then the rest of it goes to the remainder of your operating budget, which is like supplies and curriculum and things like that. So right now, I'm projecting 73% of our costs will go towards salaries and OECs. And again, we do have an extra pay to give you an idea. One of our biweekly pay, our payroll is like well over $600,000, well, about $620,000. So we do have that's a biweekly pay that we're seeing, and that's what drives this number. And the 27th pay, obviously, there's impact. Our mortgage or rent or our debt service is still really low, which is great. It's 8%. Our student transportation, which basically the bus company gets every penny that we get for all of our transportation dollars for students, kind of like a pass-through. And then the remainder of our operating budget will go to everything else. This is important. I don't calculate the percent revenue using local donations, construction funds, or grants. And the reason I don't do that, that's not money that we often get or we can guarantee to get every year. I like to use it on traditional funding, which is basically a little bit of our school generated revenue, but the state and the local school district money that we get based on our enrollment, because that's something that's going to be consistent as long as the state funding model doesn't change. If I pumped it up with, $3 million in grant money, these percentages would drop. And I don't think that would be a true depiction of how we're really spending our money. That makes sense? If it does. All right. Okay. So now for the budget, I do like to show when we look at the revenue, basically every bucket that we get in the financial reporting, for example, your state revenue, that's all these lines. I show that as one number, but I like to show it all. Again, and if anyone ever has a question, just please ask me. But bottom line, again, like I report on the finance report, I'm projecting $13.6 million in state revenue. I'm sorry about the dog. Let me try to get this dog out of my office. Sorry about that. And then we get into the local. So the biggest piece of local, the subcategory is our local school district funding, which is at the top. So you see 6.5, which is already depicted on our financial report. But what I was trying to, I think I mentioned, I think I have a chart to show all of you. So this over here, that's how I come up with the local, my projected local funding, because nothing's been locked in yet. You know, DOE hasn't given us their official notice, so we have to project. But anyhow, they had sent preliminary numbers to us based on the school district's local expenditures. So what that means, and I know most of you had the financial training, our local school district money, the money that follows the students, that is actually not based on revenue the school districts get. It's actually based on their expenditures, which is an awful model, but that's what the model looks like in Delaware. So we don't, you know, we can't do much about it. But ultimately, what I want to share with you, it's actually very favorable this year. I show each district that we're pulling kids from, even if it's just one student. But you see the difference is quite significant based on last year, and for which is a positive for us. Last year, if you remember, for the returning board members, we took a massive dip in our local funding per student because of basically one school district, which we just have no control over. So basically, this is how I project the local school district funding, and that these numbers were given to all the charter schools from DOE. So back to the subcategories. The budget this year, I have us at $8.8 million. You'll notice, too, that I include donations, construction fund, which is zero, but I did put, we do have a lot of school generator funds in here. You'll see our lunch reimbursement and purchases, you know, over $700,000. The difference this year, last year because of the pandemic, every child was free. So we were getting a lot of reimbursement money because every child was using it for free. This year, we're back to the old normal way, which is you have a free population, you have a reduced population, and you have a full pay population. So that's why I'm projecting a little bit of a decrease, trying to go back to the original. If you look a couple of years ago, that number is 513,000. So, and I watch these numbers very closely. So when I do the final operating budget, because we'll be, you know, almost what, 90 days into the school year, I really get down to a daily rate to help project for the final operating budget. So, it'll be a lot tighter, I should say, when I do report it in January, based on, again, trending. Okay, so for a subtotal federal, this is basically a consolidated grant. I failed to mention all the red numbers are carryover numbers. They do not get counted in the subtotals. That's the $6.9 million down here at the bottom, which is previous year carrier. So this is new revenue, $23.2 million. Total revenue with the carryover, over $30 million. And then I'm going to get into some expense detail, but again, these are all the subcategories. I'm projecting $24 million. Now you'll notice that's more than new revenue. But as I mentioned earlier, this is a direct result of us getting that $1 million grant basically 10 days before the year ended. And because we have to report it when we get it, it shows as revenue last year, which is now part of carryover. But when you really look at this, new revenue versus new expense, it looks like we're in the red. It's just a timing thing. If you give us back you take that $1 million away, I mean, we're actually to the good, almost $200,000, which is typical for a preliminary operating budget. Again, it's just a timing thing. So again, total expenditure is $24 million. So I am projecting still, you know, $6.1 million as far as a carryover, which will, again, just like last year, we're going to be very well off as far as our bond covenants and just how much cash we're holding on to. So no issues here. Any questions before I jump into the expenditure detail?
Greg, could you repeat that cash carryover part again from last year?
Yeah, $6.9 million.
Yeah.
It's right here.
So you were saying it was, if you take out the million, or are you saying that? So I'm sorry. Are you saying that if you take a look at if you add the million into this year's budget, we would increase our cash this year by $200,000?
Yeah. So the difference, the new revenue minus the expense is $850,000. I don't know if you can see this over here, $850,000. But again, it's basically because I got to put the expense in exactly towards a grant that we received. So we would be in the black Actually, it'd be 150 Luis. It'd be, we would be in the black 150,000 to start as far as my preliminary operating.
Okay.
It's just the time. I think everyone, I should probably mention this. So we always try to budget new revenue versus, I'm sorry, new expense towards new revenue. We always want to increase our cash carry. And that's what we typically do. But this is strictly a timing thing. And I should mention, if we do better than the grants, you know, if we do like we did last year with just the grants, we're going to be in the black anyway. But we don't have that committed money yet, so I obviously don't report it. I project, but that's it. It's a shame that we have to operate this way, but it is just timing, and it's the way it is. Luis, is there anything else you need me to, as far as get into, or any other questions?
I'm good, thank you. Unless anyone else does.
And I'll just say this. I know I'm beating a dead horse here. If that money would have come in July 1 or later, we wouldn't be discussing it. The carryover would have been less, but the carryover was solid regardless. All right, I want to move on. All right, so again, now we get into expenditure detail. So here we go. Total salaries, again, there's our budget, almost $11 million. Other employment costs. So I showed it 31.93%. That's exactly what, you know, all the state entities have, not just our school. And then the only difference is this is always a wild card. And we ended up under last year in OECs, and this is why. It's still too early for me to know exactly how much our health insurance is going to cost. Just because of the way when team members are hired, and then it takes, I will have the rates. I will be able to tighten this number up a lot greater. I'm just kind of speculating, but when I do the operating budget, obviously by then we know who's in our, you know, who's been on the books and we know the actual cost. Healthcare can go anywhere from $0 to almost $23,000 for one team member. So not all the selections are made, and some of them, it actually takes a couple months for them actually start coming out as expense. So, but that number, I try to use like 15,000 or 16,000 per team member that's new. Okay, so total salaries and OEC, I'm projecting 16.5, but again, that's 73.41%, which also includes the 27th pay. Total travel. Big ticket there is a bus transportation, which you see is $1.3 million, but the budget's $1.45. Total contracted services, $2.1 million. Total supplies and materials, $2 million, but I do call this out again for all of you. Grant, and that's for expense for the high school this year. Total capital outlay equipment, $40,000. And then the big one here, again, the bond debt is 1.9, and then just $20,000, which I just kind of add in there because we always do additional fencing and do, it could be a basin that we have to get repaired, which could be like $7,000. But we got to have a little bit of money in there just so we can expect, or we probably should expect, an expense there. Grand total, all categories, $24 million. So now I'll ask if anyone has any questions on the whole report, but really the expenditure.
Greg, it's Anna. Yeah. So you included the 27th pay for your staff, for your team?
Yes.
Wonderful. I am so proud of
us,
Speed Up, for that.
Yeah. So I'm thank you for bringing that up. So, you know, and Margie and I, we, and not just the other administrator as well, but, you know, for me, I am all over the budget and every expense, I don't want to say hurts, but it matters. But this was an expense that we knew We want to keep our team. We value our team. And we will get funded. The sad part is we will only get funded for a state portion of our state-funded position. Again, a lot of you have been through the finance training, but just one part of our state funding is called Division I units. We'll end up around 90 units, and you'll come in our building or you ask Karen, our HR director, we'll have 90 people. So we use our Division I units to hire teachers because that's what you're supposed to do. But we have a lot of other positions, and we have a lot of other funding sources, like the consolidated grant, other funds that are not truly state-funded positions. So there is no way, even though we don't have to do it at all, there is no way we can say, well, let's just give the increase, the 27th pay to those that are state-funded, and let's only give them what we're funded for. So it is an expense, but I think it's a necessary expense. Most people wouldn't understand it, but I'm sure school districts will be given a 27th pay, but and I'm glad you brought it up because that's something we don't have to do. But even though it does cost us, and knowing that we were sitting on over $6 million, probably wouldn't have gone over well if we didn't do anything but that. And I think that was the right decision. So, but thank you for bringing that up.
No, thank you guys for doing that. It really shows your care for your team. It makes a wonderful difference. Not all districts are doing it, I will tell you personally. So,
they're not?
No.
I didn't know that. Well, shame on them.
Shame on, yes.
Well, you know what, Anna? I know I'm kind of sidetracking here, but our retention rates are very high, and I think that's attributed to Margie's leadership and the emphasis we put on the team and trying to take care of them. Teaching is a difficult profession. Last year was an awful year, and we recognize that. So I don't think Margie, correct me if I'm wrong, it was probably a 15-minute discussion after I presented you with the numbers, if you will. But it was a private conversation between Margie and I. It was an easy
decision. We knew it was the right thing to do. So Greg was able to make it work. And so we're glad that we're able to do it. But thank you, Anna, for that feedback. That's good.
I think I'm done, Luis.
Perfect. All right. No motion needs to be taken on a preliminary operating budget, correct?
No, you do. You should approve
it. So let's make a motion to accept the preliminary operating budget as presented.
I make a motion to accept.
Jeff? Second?
Second, Rebecca Penick-Stetson.
All in favor? Any opposed? Perfect, motion carries. All right. So Greg, update.
Sorry, who was the movement?
I'm sorry, it was Jeff and then Rebecca.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Greg, update on high school.
Oh, okay. Real quick. So the goal was to have a small portion of the high school done, which involved three classrooms, two larger areas that will be used for educational spaces now. They're done. Everything, we've got the CFO, and interestingly, through the year, towards the end of the year, I actually asked the construction company if we could not try to get the bathrooms done, which were not part of the original permit, and they told me they would, but they couldn't guarantee how long it would take, and then they had to go back to the county. But the nice thing is the bathrooms are done, the new student bathrooms, which is going to be very helpful. But again, it's another example of the construction company that we have, Nolan Associates, the partnership. We're on time. Actually, more has been finished than what was originally projected, and we're still on budget. We've not had one change order. So it's all good from that front. The school looks amazing. If I know not all the board members have been out there, but if you go out there, you're going to see the exterior of the building has changed dramatically. it's really starting to get people excited. For those board members that haven't seen the high school, not only on the inside, I give you this challenge. Get out there and take a look. You're going to love it. That's my update, Luis. It's all good.
Great. All right, development update. Guillermina.
Sure, sorry, I was not able to find the mic. But just briefly, we met and continue working diligently on development stuff. Just quickly bringing you guys up to speed. We continue working on the expansion campaign. We are in the phase of family and friends, identifying lead teachers. For that, preparing the information session to present to the members. We expect to raise $500,000 in this phase. And I believe, and Margie, correct me if I'm wrong, that it was presented to the team a few days ago. In terms of grant opportunities, Crystal Trust is due September 15th. Working on the McDonald's Foundation, Chichester Foundation, Borky Hagley Foundation, among others. We continue conducting tours and talk meetings. For example, the Borky Hagley Foundation, Alan Levine, who works for Sodell. As you recall, he was the former DIDO director. Is also expected to visit soon. Matt Morrison from the Dream Center. And upcoming invites are for Senator Carper, Senator Coons. Continue building partnerships like Chris Locke, Sean's House, and Louis Cummings supporting kids. Matt Morrison and Reverend Chris Ditto from Dream Center. I'm going to put in the chat what we intend to communicate to stakeholders. It's a nice video that I'll share with you in a second. Maybe when I finish, I'll share that with you so I can continue with the news. And in relation to planning and objectives associated to what we decided back in the strategic session, what we intended to do, we continue delivering on that. As you recall, we already had a performed English-Spanish reading of Hamlet that was back in May 12th. The attendance was not that great, but it signaled that there's potential in there. School clubs. And Margie is working on enhancing the school calendar to reflect more events that have dual language. And the objective two was related to create parent caregiver support around biliteracy and multi-language. And Wanda is helping us in the connection with Parent Academy. Let me just closing by sharing school events more that what we intend to do at this point. We're aiming to the Hispanic Heritage event and details to follow. Not that we have the information right now, but quite busy activities and working very closely with Margie and the team. So I'm going to stop right there. And Elizabeth, if I'm missing something, please feel free to correct me or add as needed.
I think Margie did kind of mention that the Hispanic Heritage Month event is likely not happening this year.
That is correct. Yeah. It was indeed. Thank you. Thanks for refreshing my memory. Yes, because of the many things that Margie already mentioned, is likely not happening this year. So we're hoping that this is going to happen in the next one. Right?
Yeah, but I just want to give a shout out to Lynn. Really worked hard to try to find some different options, some venues. And the thing that we get
yes,
ends up being the hang up is just liability of having like an event like that. Because the first thing they ask is, how many people are you expecting? And we say like 500.
And the parking, you know, and the lights. Yes.
They're like, whoa. So, yeah, we looked into lots of different options, the state parks and some of the companies in our area. But it's just not going to work. So, but we are going to obviously celebrate and do a lot of great things regarding Hispanic heritage. We're just going to do them within the school day.
That is correct. And I was hoping, I mean, we discussed last time we got together the possibility. She was still exploring. So I agree with you. The poor thing was working really diligently to make it happen, but it didn't materialize. So there you have it, Luis.
Thank you. And I appreciate some of the updates on the objectives, particularly under the goals. One of the things we'll cover off on during the retreat. So very helpful. Thank you. Perfect. All right. Rebecca, Dee and I.
Okay. For those of you who are new, usually we spend most of this little 5 minutes talking about what has been happening at Aspira during the school year to support DEI. So during the summer, there's not as much to report on that front. And I also talk about what we've been doing as a committee. And as a committee, we are looking still to clarify what our goals are for this school year, and also kind of looking to restructure the DEI committee a little bit in that it is, I think, our newest committee. I think it's just been here. This will be its second year. And this is my third year as the chair. And so we rotate after 3 years. So I'm hoping that this year, I'm hoping to have a co-chair to kind of continue that process. And I'm also wondering if we will have an opportunity during our retreat to discuss DEI goals. I don't know what I'm not clear on the agenda for the retreat.
Yeah, we're still working on the agenda, given some of the moving parts that, you know, we discussed earlier. So still to be determined, but we can certainly chat offline.
Okay, great. Yeah, so we've been basically as the board committee for DEI or DEIB, if we want to add in belonging, which I think is a good move because that's been done at Aspira itself as well, the schools. We've been trying to kind of catch up to what is already happening at Aspira and looking to sort of formalize our DEI trajectory at the board level to sort of capture what's happening, articulate the standard, and then provide a roadmap for the future. So I'm looking for more insight in general from the board on the creation of those goals for this school year. And I'm also looking to recruit. So be looking for an email to all of you just to see who's interested in this committee, and then looking to schedule meetings and see what meeting times work for people. Any questions?
Yes. What does DEI stand for?
Oh, thanks. Diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Rebecca, one thing to just cover off that we will, you know, one of the action items we're proposing is to have folks determine what committees they are interested in. So at the retreat, so spot on and in line, just to cover off there.
So maybe I'll hold off on the email and see what emerges from the meeting.
Okay. Yeah, we can talk as we move. If an email is necessary, then, because if things shift, then we can certainly talk about it. But yeah.
Great. Thanks.
Perfect. Thank you for the update. Anna Pitino.
Hi. So the PTO board met on August 10th at school to discuss and to begin planning events and fundraisers for the upcoming school year. So we did hold a uniform resale on Saturday, August 13th. We're working on getting the roller skating night for the whole school community. We had some of us volunteer to come in during the back to school nights and the kindergarten play date this week. We need Mike, the president, is going to reach out to Jose, the head of school, to ask for 90% of teacher participation in the PTO for this year as a goal. And for teacher presentations during our meetings. And the top priority right now for the PTO is just to get our memberships and volunteers up so we can further help the school community in this way. And a couple of things I do hope to speak about during our retreat will be those goals from regarding the biliteracy framework and the component from the PTO. And I think that was it for so far. We're going to meet again on September 7th, and our first public meeting for the PTO is going to be September 14th. So we're meeting every second Wednesday of the month, like always.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you, Anna. Mm-hmm. The meeting in August already happened, right?
Yes, and I'm sorry. Yeah. We had trouble setting where it was going to be held. That's why I did not reach out.
Okay.
So last minute, we did end up coming into Aspida, to the boardroom.
Okay.
But the 7th, we're meeting September 7th, also Wednesday at school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because one of the things I'll end up doing is connecting with all the chairs of the committees and just catching up one-on-one.
Well, yeah, we can do that whenever you, yes, I will make time for you, Luis.
Yep. Sounds good.
Hey, Anna, one thing that occurs to me, because I love the goal, the aggressive goal of having more T and PTO with the teacher participation. But if you guys are meeting every second Wednesday of the month, that actually falls on when the team meeting is. So Jose and Kathleen meet with the team after school from 4 to 5 every second Wednesday of the month. So just it may be a challenge, because they're already extending their school day, and then they would have to then join the PTO meeting that evening again.
Oh, we did not know this. Thank you, Margie. There's something mm-hmm. I will definitely share with them on the 7th. Mm-hmm. It's not on the calendar for our school, our PTO meetings. So maybe that is a good discussion to have to change yeah. those meeting days.
Yeah, have that discussion with Jose, but it just Absolutely. Occurred to me when you said second Wednesday.
And with Mike, yes. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Anna. Margie, I believe you're up.
I'm up, yes. Okay, let me see. So once again, since you know, we just went through the summer and starting this school year. So my presentation, for the most part, I'm going to give you the enrollment update. We did not have a spotlight person this month, just because we wanted to give teachers the opportunity to just focus on getting ready for the start of school, but we will have one every month going forward. But enrollment is looking good. You know, it is always a moving target until September 30th, because you know, we get notified of families changing their mind, and we have movement, and then we call people from the wait list, and we've got to give them a couple of days to come in to register, and we don't count them until they're absolutely are registered. So you can see there the number we have registered, the number we have pending, and you know, Lilia, who oversees our enrollment, is working really hard to just continue to keep that pipeline going. And she gives us an update every day on where we are with the enrollment. So as of earlier today, we're at 99.4%. But once again, always changes. Right now, we're hosting the AVA back to school event outside in the cafeteria. And me just going out there and talking to some families, they mentioned that they've been spreading the word about our program, and that they, you know, for me to expect additional emails from families interested in signing up. So we're going to continue to enroll through September 30th. So always looking to not only meet the 100%, but exceed it. And the wait list I already presented to you in their executive session. So it's the same one, but you can see also the 9th through 11th grade as well, which at this point, we have depleted our wait list for 9, 10th, and 11th, we have depleted the wait list. So, and then the other thing I wanted to present, so let me just, I just want to share with you the presentation from our back to school event. So when the team reported back to work,
just real quick, the enrollment piece, you said we're not above 100% today?
As of today, 99.4%. Yeah.
And then are we just waiting to get confirmation for other folks on the wait list to get to 105?
Yeah, so that just means that invitations have gone out. Yeah, so it's always a moving target. It always changes. But the minute we're notified that somebody is withdrawing for whatever reason, Lily immediately then makes contact with the next person on the wait list.
Can I just add real quick? So sure. Pending or actual confirmed, but they have not completed the paperwork. So you don't see like pending that she's reached out to. Only that have contact and say yes, we're in. So that's why Margie's saying right now we know we're at 99.4%.
Right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hold on a second. I just want to be sure I have it open in PowerPoint. What I'm going to share with you is just the presentation from our back to school event. I'm not going to go through everything, but I did upload it into Board on Track so that you can look at it in more detail. But one thing that's helpful when we all come together and we have our huddle, it's a great opportunity for the team to meet one another. And sorry, hold on a second. Okay, can you guys see that okay right now? I can't. Is it up, Greg?
Yes.
Okay, just want to be sure. Okay, so it's a great opportunity for us to just regroup and just with our new team members joining, getting to know us and what Aspeed is all about. It's just a great time for us to sort of refresh our memory as to our why, our purpose for doing what we do, and really just get the team really, you know, excited about the start of the school year. So this year, my topic was, you know, talking about the past, the present, and the future. So learning from the past, living in the present, and preparing for the future. So, you know, Rebecca, I think you'll be happy to know that we've incorporated acknowledging our land acknowledgement being part of that, of our process. And I shared with the team how I was introduced to this idea years ago, actually from one of our national funders. And I didn't completely understand or embrace the idea, and I didn't necessarily incorporate it into my, actions. But until I went to a conference and somebody from the indigenous tribe in the local area actually presented the land acknowledgement. And it was very powerful to hear from somebody and how much it means to them that we acknowledge the fact that we're gathering in traditional land of indigenous people. So in case you didn't know, the Lenape and the Nanticoke were the indigenous people in our state. So acknowledging that and obviously celebrating that as part of our DEIB journey. And we talked about Antonia Pantoja, always reminding our team about the legacy that Antonia Pantoja made for us and the torch that we have to carry going forward. She's an inspiration to all of us. And, you know, we teach our students about Antonia Pantoja at the high school as part of freshman seminar. And it's important that we always, and we incorporate this on our onboarding with all new team members so that they hear the history of the advocacy that Dr. Antonia Pantoja did and how she really pushed, not only founded Aspida, but pushed and advocated for bilingual education. And then we just talked about the things that we can learn from the past. So just going to skip through here, but these are the ones that, we had a lot of celebration. So when we met as a board, back in August of 21, we had talked a lot about, you know, showing appreciation and making sure that we celebrate all the great milestones and successes of the team. So this is, you know, the opportunity that we get to do it, sort of the kickoff to the school year. So I wanted to just make sure you know that we showed our appreciation for every single one of you. because we understand that you volunteer your time and you have a vested interest in the success of the school, but you also have a regular day job, you know, so we appreciate the time and the commitment that you make to our school. We also wanted to recognize the Financial Oversight Committee for the same thing. And then we also recognize our ECDC team, which, you know, they're taking care of the kids while we're meeting in the auditorium. And unfortunately, they don't get to see this presentation because, you know, we aren't able to release them from that responsibility. We also wanted to acknowledge some new partnerships. Lynn and Wanda have introduced us to the Dream Center. They're actually our neighbors. They're on the other side of the DuPont building. And from the minute we met them, they came and did a tour with us this summer, and we've immediately have made a connection with them, and they've already donated. They asked us, like, what are things that the teachers need that would, you know, that they would love to have at the beginning of the year? And, you know, teachers love school supplies. So they donated a bunch of school supplies to our teachers. So when they came back, there was actually school supplies out for them that they could just grab as needed. They also filled backpacks for our students. And then we recognize our birthdays. Just so you know, like every year, one of the things that we do is decide on a special gift that we give each team member. Nothing really expensive, but something that just a token of appreciation and just recognizing birthdays and celebrating that as a family. So, you know, we send out the email and then the gift is delivered to their mailbox. And then we wanted to congratulate. We've had some great congratulations. So if you haven't seen this, this is in the Delaware Today magazine. There's a spread in there about the Teachers of the Year. And just happened to be that our Teacher of the Year, Diana Magana, is actually on the cover. I mean, not on the cover of the magazine, but she's the cover story. And her picture was there. And if you can see, like, she has this beautiful sunflower dress, and she's actually standing in our sunflower garden. But it's a nice little blurb in there about her. But if you recall, she was not only selected as our Teacher of the Year for ASPIDA, but then she was also selected to represent all the charter schools. So she was the Delaware Charter School Network Teacher of the Year. And then we had other celebrations and promotions. Kelly Cruz on Greg's team was promoted to Director of School Finance. Kelly has been with us many years. She was actually one of the spotlights that you guys got to hear. But we were very excited to be able to give her those additional responsibilities, and she's definitely earned that promotion. Dee has been promoted to Director of Organizational Culture. You know, Dee, who started with us as an art teacher, has definitely grown in our school and continue to accept additional responsibilities and bring a lot of great ideas to the table. And I really credit her for helping us start this whole journey in DEIB. Lynn was promoted to Director of Development and Community Engagement. If you recall, when we first hired Lynn, she was part-time and we just hired her to just raise money for us, right? But we quickly saw that one of the knacks that Lynn has is able to build relationships in the community and get the community engaged. And then another thing that we realized is that for her to be successful in development and raising money, we have to build the relationships. And then that also requires that we have a strong communication plan. And so we decided to grow Lynn's team. So now Wanda Lopez and Evelyn Diaz report to Lynn so that we now have community engagement, development, communications all under one team. So Wanda's overseeing communications and community engagement, in addition to the Family Resource Center. And this was exciting. And our special education team, we were able to actually create some leadership roles and promote two people into these ED roles. One is for K-4, the other one is for 5-8. And what that allows them to do is these are special education teachers that have grown with us over the years. And Kim Shoecraft has been with us for 10 years. And they are now going to be supervising the teachers that support students in those grade levels. So promotion for Kim and a promotion for Sarah. Jasmine was she did her counseling internship with us this past year, and we were able to promote her and hire her into the counseling position at the high school. Mike Torres, if you remember, he was a spotlight of ours, and we were very sad to find out that Mike was very torn about an offer that was presented to him to join Goldie Beacom College as their assistant athletic director. But, you know, Mike has been with us for a long time. He started with us as a paraprofessional, and he's grown along the way. We recently promoted him to dean of students, but he's always been very open with us that his career aspirations were to eventually be in a college university and as an athletic director. And so this is an opportunity that he had explored couple of years ago, and he didn't get it, but that the person they hired didn't work out, and the athletic director reached out to Mike. So we were sad to see him go, but we are really proud of him, and we support him in his career aspirations. What that allowed us to do is actually to move Jorge Camacho Saez, who we hired as our safety and relationship coordinator, into that dean of students role. And that was really important to us because Jorge has been working at the high school and has developed those relationships with the students side by side with Mike Torres and Debbie Penches and the head of school. So it was important that we put somebody in that role that the kids already knew. It's very hard for adults to basically leave schools over the summer and not get the opportunity to say goodbye to students. Those relationships are really important. So it was important for us to fill that position with someone that they knew. There you go. We're really excited about this opportunity. Cuquito, if you haven't met him, he is one of our bus drivers. And, you know, going back to the comment that I made, that we are very intentional about building our own and really recognizing talent and fostering that talent and developing that talent and that leadership. And Coquito's another perfect example of somebody who came to us as a bus driver. He heard about all the things that we're doing. He took the initiative to meet with me, share with me what his career aspirations were. And so this year he's going to get the opportunity to actually support Jorge as a behavior interventionist at the high school. And Eddie, we were able to promote the second shift team lead, which was great. We introduced Eli as director of operations. So now Greg is getting much needed support and help with overseeing the operations since he oversees operations and finance. So now he has Kelly sort of taking a bigger lead and a bigger role on the finance part. And he's got Eli now helping to take a bigger lead on the operations. Kristen, we were able to, if you remember, Kristen she's one of our pioneers, and she was our first special education teacher, and then she was blossomed into the director of education and enrichment. But after having children, she decided to step away from an administrative role, and she helped Ashley start the AVA program. She has done an amazing job. I could not have started that program without her help. And so this year we have deemed her as the administrator for the program so that she can continue to support the teachers and the students. She does the scheduling right now. She's out there facilitating this back to school event. She coordinated it all. So she's amazing. We're happy to have her skills overseeing that program. And then we had anniversaries, and this is the other thing that's really important to us, celebrating those milestones, right? So we had all these people, 20 people, celebrate their 5-year anniversary. And what we were able to do is, you know, we were able to give them some swag, you know. One thing that we did is we invested in these lanyards, and the lanyards for them say Aspirante since 2017. And then we have 5 and 10-year pins. I don't know if you can see my 10-year pin there, but we also have 5-year pins. And then they also get a windbreaker with Aspira logo on it. So we made a big deal about that celebration, and it was really cool. And then we had 4 team members actually celebrate their 10-year anniversary. So same thing, Aspirante since 2012, and they got a 10-year pin, and they got a beautiful sweater that was monogrammed and personalized with their name. It was great. You know, afterwards, I was bombarded. I think all the administrators were bombarded with people saying, hey, you know, I've been here 3 years. Do I get something? You know, so it's a good problem to have. People want that recognition. We had decided to do it sort of in 5-year increments. But the nice thing is that people are excited about being recognized this way. Oh, so sorry, I forgot that I had these little transitions in there. And then this is the part, I'm not going to go into this, but once again, it's in the board on track. If you want to get to know our team better and sort of start putting names with faces, this is the what we give so that you can see who's on what team. A suggestion that I got from the board last year was, you know, possibly adding pictures in here. We haven't been able to make that happen yet. However, if you go to our website, as we get the pictures, you know, if there may be older pictures there, and then for new team members, there may not be a picture, but when we get the school pictures through LifeTouch, we upload those pictures so that if you do want to put a face with a name, you can do that through the website, but we didn't have the pictures for this. But here's where you can just find out, like, what's the lineup and who's on what team and who's serving in what role. So this is, you know, it takes a bulk of the meeting because there is a lot and our team has definitely grown. So you can see from the stars, the number of new people. So I'm just going to click through these and the team. Hold on, let me just come out. That way I can just forward. And then I do want to share with you just sort of the message that we delivered after that. So in talking about preparing for the future, being able to let the team know, you know, and obviously, you know, the team understands that there's things that we do as, you know, with the board, and there's some things that we can share with them and some things that we can't, but we felt that it was important to at least give them an idea of the direction that we're taking. And so we first wanted to talk to them about the feedback from the listening sessions. If you recall, Lourdes and Luis hosted listening sessions. I also hosted listening sessions and other administrators did as well. And we've done this consistently for the past 3 years, actually 4 years. And we wanted to make sure the team understood, you know, thank you for participating. And we heard you, we listened, and we reflected on what you guys said, and here's some of the actions that we've taken from that. But three of the sort of overarching reoccurring themes was COVID, academics, and behavior. So one of the things we wanted to let them know, definitely this year is going to look a lot different than last year. We're not going to be doing the testing. There will be test kits available. We finally did get the CDC, the Department of Public Health guidance, which is interesting because after making us wait for the guidance, basically what they said was it's up to each individual school to decide what they want to do. So it's up to each individual school to decide whether they want to require people to isolate after testing positive. It's up to us whether we want to notify families that somebody has been infected in the area. It's up to us whether we want to do contact tracing. It's all up to us, right? So before they had said that, we had sort of reading between the lines and what we had seen from CDC, this is what we were pulling out of the guidance. No contact tracing, that infected people would isolate for 5 days so they could return to work wearing a mask for the next 5 days. And then that we would have the test available on site, but we would no longer have Quidel testing. So the other thing we talked about is the academics, which we heard a lot about in listening sessions. Teachers concerned about the learning loss, parents concerned about it, students concerned about it. In addition to that, you know, how the behavior was impacting the learning, and the perception that new students were contributing to the behavior problems. And then just teachers struggling with how to prioritize the academic needs and the social emotional needs of students. So, okay. So one thing I did want to share with them is let them know, like, and it's always hard. I always debate whether to share the test data with them on that first day. But we felt that it was important because we know what's weighing on them. They want to know where are the kids at? Like, how much have they digressed since COVID? So we showed them this high level slide about, this was where we were spring of 2019 for reading proficiency. So in the blue is our students. There's the state, there's us, Christina School District, Colonial School District, back in 2019 and reading. And this is what we look like in spring of 22. So as you can see, all students have gone, have lost some learning. Same thing for math, where we were in 2019 versus where we are in 2022. So, yes.
Yeah, Margie, in this one too, right? This is, that's 2019 before we started the expansion in middle school, right? To
yes. Act
theater for the high school. So the other element of that is that there may be students that have maybe coming in that may have been out of proficiency, potentially lower as a starting point prior to COVID before it even came in our test scores. Is that?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you're exactly right, Luis. And you know, come to think of it, that's something else. When you think about potential opportunities, like we want to be able to grow our enrollment from kindergarten up. But what we recently have done in response to opening up the high school is add more students at the middle school. Well, that's not ideal, right? But because we know that the longer they're with us, the better they perform academically. So we definitely see, you know, the result of that to some extent. But bottom line, the message I wanted the team to understand is, you know, your assumption that the students have digressed is accurate. They have across the state, right? So we know that and we need to move forward. So I also shared with them the science and social studies. Unfortunately, because science and social studies standards were going through a lot of changes, the testing didn't take place back in 2019. So we don't have that comparison, but at least to show them how are we doing compared to the state, compared to our two you know, largest districts that our students come from. And then the other thing I wanted to share with them is something that came out in the listening sessions was this perception that our behavior issues were primarily due to these new students that we brought in middle school, right? And we wanted to find out, like, is that perception the reality or is it not? So we pulled the numbers and looked at, here's the East and West campuses combined in 2019 and then the 1920 school year versus 2021. Let's just look at incidents per day. Before the pandemic, it was about 7 incidents per day. And then we had the pandemic. So you see that the 2021 school year, everything went down, right? Because for a part of the year, the kids weren't in the building. They were virtual. And then when we did come back in the building, only about half of them came back in the building. We weren't at full capacity. So it was just not a normal year. But after going through this to this, then coming back for the 21-22 school year and jumping up to 9 incidents a day, definitely the teachers felt it, right? So we wanted to share this with them so that they understand, we hear you. We all felt the difference in the discipline and the incidents. But, you know, what are we going to do about that going forward? That's right. So this is the perception of the new kids. This is the slide I was talking about. We wanted to look at 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. What was the percent of the students that were new? And here's the percent. But then out of the students that were new, what percent were actually the referrals? So referrals are when a teacher, you know, they are referring that student to the culture and climate team for basically for disciplinary reasons. So they've tried to manage the behavior in their classroom. Now they're referring them to the culture and climate team. So you can see here what percentage of referrals were new students versus the high flyers. So the high flyers are the students that have multiple incidents, multiple referrals, and then the percentage of suspensions of new students. So the purpose of this slide was to dispel the perception that it's the new kids, because once again, if we go into the school year with that bias and that idea in our head, it's going to impact the way we interact with those students. It's going to impact the relationship we build with those students. So it's important that if it's not the reality, let's just dispel the perception. Then we talked about where do we go from here. So a big focus on building relationships. We all agree that the one thing that we have in common, whether you work in a kitchen or you work in the classroom, you work in the main office, the one thing we all have in common is that we're all relationship managers. And that is the most important part of our job, is building relationships. We heard that from the listening sessions. We heard that from the students themselves, that they miss that sense of belonging and connection with the adults in the building. And obviously COVID had a big impact on that, but also all of us as adults still getting acclimated to the post-COVID situation, feeling stressed ourselves, but we now need to reset and refocus on building those relationships and building a sense of community. And so we, really looked at the different things over the years that we've done to sort of help the teachers with their toolbox. And these are all, the different things, think about it, over 11 years that we've introduced to really help with that mission of building relationships and taking care of our team, taking care of our students. Started with responsive classroom, and then we focused on being more trauma-informed. We introduced Aspira con Cariño as our overarching theme and philosophy. We then participated in a pilot with the Department of Education to introduce multi-tiered system of supports, MTSS. And now that has been implemented statewide. And that's as opposed to RTI, response to intervention, that only looked at the academic needs of students. MTSS is looking at the academic, social, emotional, and behavior needs of students. And then on top of that, we also then introduce DIB. So a lot of things that we have in our toolbox, but the one thing we felt that we needed that would really sort of bring everything together and really help us achieve that next level with our students is introducing restorative justice to our school. And over the years, some people have been exposed to restorative justice and maybe have taken a training or have read a book and things like that. But we have not been intentionally have introduced it to the entire school community. So we started this summer. 10 of us, including myself, went through a 4-day training on restorative justice. We found an amazing company and facilitator that took us through that process this summer, and it's the train the trainer model. So now all 10 of us are now equipped to now train the rest of the team. So, we decided that, and the company helped us understand, it's really a 3-year process. It's not like you can introduce restorative justice and things change overnight, but we put together a plan of what that's going to look like over the next 3 years. And so, we focused on building relationships, how that was going to be something that we would do collectively. We had then the facilitator from Restorative Justice come with on this past Monday and do a whole school introduction. And then we all experience a community circle together, which is something that I hope that as a board, we're able to do with you. It's very powerful. And, the one thing about responsive classroom is that over the years, I've heard from some of the teachers that, hey, Margie, that's a really good strategy for the younger kids, but that doesn't work for middle school and high school. Well, restorative justice works for all ages, adults, children, it doesn't matter, and all relationships, not just student and teacher relationship or student-student relationship, but it could work for marriages. It could work for adult relationships and co-workers. So very powerful stuff. So we're very excited. And I can tell you after going through it on Monday, the team is really excited. But the other thing is just, just making the point with the team that another way you can build relationship with your students is get to know them outside the classroom. So we have lots of opportunities with the extended care program, after school clubs, the athletic program. So, asking for them to step up and help with those different roles, which was a struggle last year. This was really hard. It was hard to get people to do things outside of their regular work day because of the stress everybody was feeling. But, we had to remind people that, we need to turn the corner and we need to go back to building those relationships. And this is one way you can do it. And so And then I wanted to share with them the strategic vision. I wanted to at least share with them, you know, the what the vision statement is, and let them know that, you know, I will be continuing to look at opportunities. Don't know what opportunity is going to happen when, but just being aware of it. And I wanted to also then tee them up for like, what does this mean for you? Number one, I want to be sure that they understand that as much as we may want to expand, there's going to be some hurdles that we need to overcome. Obviously, there's the financial hurdle, and Greg and I would never propose an idea without it being financially sound. But the other hurdle is really the community. As you guys know, there's been, you know, there was a bill that was introduced. Fortunately, it was squashed, but the idea was to put a moratorium on charter expansion. So when you talk about a charter wanting to expand and increase enrollment, to think that that's going to be, you know, welcomed with open arms, it's being naive. We're going to get some resistance. So letting the team know that as we're going through that review process, if we go through that review process, that I'll be asking for them to join us at the public meetings and help to rally the troops. Fundraising, I wanted to tee up the fact that the following Monday, Wanda was going to be coming in and talking to them about the friends and family phase. She did a great job with that. So letting them know we need their support, and then also getting them excited about the opportunities that are going to be coming up, you know, so letting them know, hey, if you have aspirations of being a teacher, if you have aspirations of being an administrator, and you haven't started, or you've stopped your, you know, your degree, talk to us about that, because we want to be sure that you understand we're going to grow. And as we grow, that's going to create opportunities. We need people to be ready for those opportunities. So we're going to work together to make sure that as a team, we grow our own and we develop that talent. So, and that's where I left it. So it was an exciting, exciting first day.
Yeah. A lot of great energy, it seems like, for sure. So it's awesome. Any questions for Margie?
Quick question. Are we doing, are you doing a equity conference this year?
Yes. Equity conference. It will be in February, and we're also okay. Doing the biliteracy conference again. Yes.
Great. Great. Mm-hmm.
No comment other than I don't know how you do what everything that you do. And I think we probably would have started the meeting with some of the key phrasings to kind of get us all into the spirit of what we do as a board. I stayed engaged, but, you know, that definitely was a wake-up call towards the end of the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro.
I just want to congratulate you, Margie, for not only a wonderful presentation, but I love the fact that you are bringing the team with the understanding of the vision and the mission, because this is not just for the purview of the board. This is, everybody becomes a steward of the mm-hmm. ethos of the organization. So I love the fact that they are not only on board, but you keep them informed. They are very much part of the team. In fact, they are probably the most important part of the team, because they are the face of Aspira out there. So this is wonderful and just brought, I mean, it woke me up. I was kind of dying, but this brought me the energy that I needed. So thank you very much. I hope you keep this information coming. And again, congratulations to you and your team.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Perfect. Any other questions for Margie? Comments? All right. Well, sounds like everyone's ready to now either not check out anymore, but maybe go work on something else after that. But no, thank you, Margie, again. Appreciate all the work. With that said, motion to adjourn. Well, one other thing. We'll have some updates around the retreat. That'll be forthcoming as we prepare for that. So you'll see that coming shortly. Now that I think we have some additional context of what we need the agenda to be, and we'll go from there. But thank you all for your time. Appreciate all the work and support. So
motion to adjourn / put the jammies on.
Back in 10 extent.
You mean have dinner? Bendito. Now, Luis, before we adjourn, thank you for leading our team. You know, we appreciate you taking this on. You know, so it's not an easy task.
Appreciate that. All right. Motion carries. All right. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.